Welcome to the Fearless Sellers, the Women of Amazon podcast. I'm Joey Roberts.
You know me. I think most people say I'm quite resilient. I had a real belief in what I was doing, and I really believed in my product, and I really believed that it was going to make a difference to people. And the feedback I started getting, I mean, I know Amazon sellers are normally very obsessed with getting reviews, but actually when you're doing something like that, the reviews are important, not only in terms of like the positive stuff, but also the negative, because you want to know, well, like, what's working, what's not working, what do I need to tweak, what do I need to change? But overall, the feedback was hugely positive. Like, this was a product that people needed.
Today, we have Cara Sayer on the Fearless Sellers podcast. Cara is joining us all the way from London. She's an inventor, an Amazon seller, and an all-around amazing woman. Cara, how are you doing today?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm very flattered from that lovely introduction.
Awesome. Well, right, I am so... You. What'd you say?
I said right back at you.
Oh, that's so sweet. All right. Well, let's jump in. So I just said you're living in London. And you have a daughter, Holly, that is a teenager now?
She is a lovely teenager. I was going to say a terrible teenager, but she's a lovely teenager. I'm very lucky at the moment. She says touching wood everywhere. She's 15.
Oh, wow. 15. Okay. So what is it like to have a teenager, but still be talking about baby products?
Frankly, it's a bit weird. And I'm actually not a baby person either. So I don't really, not that I don't like babies. I just don't like all babies. You know how some people just love babies, give them a baby, they're in heaven. I've never been like that. I've always I like a baby if I like the baby. Like if the baby has an attitude or the baby's got a bit of something about them, or sometimes they are just really cute. But it's not always just about like, oh, it's a baby. I love it. But I love, obviously my product is a baby product. What I think I love more than the babies is I actually just love helping the parents, because I can still remember, because I'm a sleep deprived teenage parent rather than a sleep deprived baby parent, what that feels like. And, so I think that's what I really enjoy is, helping parents kind of getting out and about and doing their thing and having a better life, basically.
So let's go back to when Holly was a baby. You encountered a problem that you solved way back then. That must have been like 2009, 2010. I'm trying to do the math.
Before that. Like, so Holly was born in 2007, October 2007. So I know that I had registered the domain name for my business at the end of December 2008. So within a sort of, 15-month gap, I'd obviously, because I can't remember the exact timeline, I just had a baby. I know I registered the domain name in December 2008, so I know I did that much. And then I launched the business at the end of 2009, as in I registered it, and I'd attended a trade show in the October of 2009, and then the products went live in kind of February, March 2010. So it was that sort of a timeline. So I know that I probably kind of came up with the concept probably around like anything from March, April 2008 to kind of obviously end of 2008 was when I sort of really started kind of motoring.
And if I recall the story, you've briefly told me, but let's dig into it. You were sitting around with a bunch of girlfriends and you couldn't get your babies to sleep.
Yeah, well, it was a little bit more than that, but yeah. So because I had a condition while I was pregnant where I was in a wheelchair. So what happened was once I was up and running again, literally up and walking. So I had Holly in the October and I was able to walk again in the January of 2008. And then I started walking with the stroller a lot, or pram as we call it in England. And I was so excited to be walking around that I was like out there walking all the time. And I think I probably walked, I mean, we walk a lot more in the UK, I think, than some people in the States do. Because in the States, obviously, the distances are longer and people tend to use their cars. But we tend to walk quite a lot of places depending on where we come, where we live. So I was walking with the pram all the time, like through all sorts of weather as well. So it was, you know, cold, hot, spring, rain, et cetera, et cetera. And as Holly got a bit older, she used to sleep quite well in the pram. And then as she got older, she got more interested in life generally and then became much more nosy and so didn't want to go to sleep. So then I did what a lot of people do, like we put muslins when it's like a spring day. When it was a freezing cold day, I would end up taking my coat off and like basically put it over the pram, and then I'd be freezing and the coat would fall off, get covered in mud as the stroller went over it, et cetera, et cetera. And then I was sitting there with a whole group of friends in this lunch that we were having, and everyone had their stroller and every person had their baby, and then we'd all given them their various bits of food, etc. You know, I think they were probably all about sort of 8-9 months, something like that. And then everyone did exactly the same thing. Everyone was putting a muslin over, a blanket, a cardigan, you know, whatever, over the pram just to get the little so-and-sos to go to sleep so that we could actually have a conversation and actually have some lunch. And I just thought, surely there must be another way. Like, surely there must be the equivalent of like a blackout blind that's for the nursery, but that we could take out and about with us in a portable way. And that was literally the beginning of the idea. Like, and I asked my friends at the time, and they were like, oh yeah, that sounds great.
Well, and it is obviously great, because that idea you have now grown into a global brand.
Yes. So the business is called Snooze Shade, because I like names that say what they do on the tin, as we have an expression over here. I don't know if you have it in the States as well, but it's like it says what it does. So it's snooze. It helps babies snooze, and it shades from the sun. It also shades from like wind chill, etc. And I love like practical names. But interestingly, one of the things I always mention about is when you're choosing a brand name, you do need to also look outside of your own parameters. Because I was thinking about calling it Buggy Blind, because it was a blind, as I was saying, for the buggy. But in some cultures and countries, there is no word for a blind of windows. There's only blind as in you can't see. So that can have like a negative like connotation. And there is sometimes no word for buggy, etc. So I went with Snooze Shade, because basically snooze wasn't really sort of something that would translate badly, and shade, pretty much every like language in the world has a word for some sort of shade. So it is something I always say to people, like, make sure you choose your brand name carefully.
I love this. So while you were coming up with this concept, you were a sleep deprived mom. You thought, hey, I can't use buggy blind, because when I sell in all these other countries, I want them to understand exactly what my product's going to do. So you were thinking really big.
Oh, I'm always go big or go home. You know, you know that.
I do know that. I love that. I love it. Okay, so now the business is booming and you have a young kid. What was that like as Holly's mom and now having this business that was also, you know, taking on its own life like a second child would?
Yeah, it was a living hell, if I'm honest. So I mean, the other thing also, that there was other stuff going on in the background. Like, I was actually going through IVF again. I went through two rounds of IVF in the first like 7 or 8 months of running the business, etc. I went into production on this product, which hadn't actually existed before. And for some mad reason, and again, I would not suggest people do what I did, I decided to order 10,000 units. I based that. I did have some numbers upon which I based that, which was that there are about 750,000 babies born every year in the UK. And I thought, hey, I'm sure I'll be able to do like 1%, which would be 7,500. And then I got a slightly better price from the factory if I bought 10,000. So I just thought, hey, in for a penny, in for a pound. So I rather recklessly, I think now, I don't think I would recommend people necessarily do that like how I did it. But I bought 10,000 units of a product that had never existed before, and went into like full scale production. And then I went to a trade show, because in those days, Amazon was not the power that it is now. And online was very underdeveloped, because remember, this is like when I was at the trade show, it was October 2009. And then I met up with a variety of big box retailers, actually they were interested in the concept, which was why I went to a trade show, because I wanted people who actually were selling to customers, my potential customer, because if they'd all turned around and said, hey, this idea is completely crap, then I would have at least have like not wasted too much time and energy, etc. I only pressed the button on production after I'd been to the trade show and got the feedback. And also I made a few product tweaks, changed the price, you know, did a whole lot of stuff which I picked up from having done the trade show and sort of chatted to other people, etc. And then went into full-scale production and then started shipping products into the UK in the February of 2010. Then there was a huge volcanic eruption in Iceland in the February, March of 2010, which then meant we had no planes coming in. So freight costs, everyone complains about COVID freight costs. They tripled literally like overnight. And I'm still flying shit in because I'm like, you know what? I can still make money. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to, my attitude is always, as long as there's a profit involved, I'll sell it. If I'm not making profit, I'm not doing it. So
and you
I
had
did,
orders
and I
to fulfill.
On. And I had orders and I had commitments to quite big retailers. So I was like, well, I've got to get them their product. Even if I do lose money, I'll have to consider it a marketing cost, you know? Anyway, I did it. I got it in, started selling. And yeah, I sold out the first 10,000 units by about September, I think, of the first year, having launched in the March.
You're listening to the Fearless Sellers, the Women of Amazon podcast. If you like what you're hearing, click the subscribe button. We have new content coming out all the time and you don't want to miss out. And that's incredible. So that's proof of your product. So you were going through what you called hell. You had Holly, you were doing IVF, you had volcanoes erupting, slowing down your shipments. What kept you going?
I think anyone, as you know me, I think most people say I'm quite resilient. I think I had a real belief in what I was doing, and I really believed in my product, and I really believed that it was going to make a difference to people. And the feedback I started getting, I mean, I know Amazon sellers are normally very obsessed with getting reviews, but actually when you're doing something like that, the reviews are important, not only in terms of like the positive stuff, but also the negative, because you want to know, well, like, what's working, what's not working, what do I need to tweak, what do I need to change? But overall, the feedback was hugely positive. Like, this was a product that people needed. I met a lady the other day. I was on the tube in London, and she had a pram, and I could see a snooze shade in her bottom of her buggy. And I just went around and went, oh, hi there, you know, oh, is that, I said, how are you getting on with your snooze shade? And she looked at me and she was obviously like, well, hang on a minute, this woman's like clearly not of child rearing age and she hasn't got a baby with her. And I was like, I said, I invented it. And she's like, oh my God, like this sort of thing. And I was like, yeah. I said, well, does it help? And she's like, oh my God, it's brilliant. All my friends have got one. The world needs this product sort of thing. And I was like, oh, great. And she was like, oh, you're not, have you like sold the business? I said, no, I still run it from home. I mean, this is my kitchen, you know, behind me. I said, I still run it from home. It's still me. And she was like, oh, wow. I thought, you know, you'd like be sitting on a beach somewhere. I said, well, I do that as well. Occasionally. I said, but, you know, it is actually quite a small business. It just looks maybe a little bit larger than it is.
I love that. Yeah. And there is that outside looking in like, hey, that I have your product. Your business is going so well. You must be on the beach and sold it. And as you and I have talked, like, you actually love running snooze shade. You're an inventor. It's a big part of who you are, and you want to continue to run it.
Well, I mean, that's where I probably am a little bit different from, as I always say, from the sort of archetypal Amazon seller, because having just spent a weekend in London with like 3 days solid of like various events, networking events with other Amazon sellers, it's really interesting because I'm a bit of a unicorn in some ways, in that I'm just very slightly odd in comparison to everyone else, because most people are focused on how do they maximize profit so that they can exit? Whereas I'm like, how do I maximize how much I can spend on myself so that I'm having a good time? No, it's not that bad. But what I do is I use the business to invest in myself, to learn more things. I also put money behind me for my pension. I do lots of practical stuff. And I also probably employ more people than I might necessarily need if I was running it to the kind of truly, like, down to the fine lines of a pure Amazon selling business, because of the fact I actually don't want the stress of that. And I mean, my brand is now 12 years old, and I'm looking ahead to, yeah, I mean, if I sell it, I get, obviously, you can imagine, I still get offers like through LinkedIn and emails every day about people wanting to buy the business. And you're right, it's kind of like a second child as well. So I would only want to hand it over to someone who I trusted. I wouldn't hand Holly over to some random stranger. So I'm not handing like snooze shade over to some random stranger. But also the other side of it is that, you know, actually, if I sell the business, even in 10 years, it's going to be a 22-year-old business. It's actually got its own value from the longevity versus the value that we all place on like quick wins, fast exit. And then, you know, I also have seen a lot of my friends sell very big businesses, like 7-8-figure exits, and then they're starting up a business all over again. And I'm like, oh my God, I don't want to do that again at the moment. So I'm like actually thinking I'm going to stick to what I'm doing. And then I might even start up another business as a side hustle, but I could do that at the same time as what I'm doing with my kind of bread and butter business. And then do the other thing as a little kind of like hobby, you know, something that I would enjoy rather than having to make it like, oh my God, I've got to start all from scratch, all over again, do the whole thing all over again.
I love that. And as a sister seller, I do want to say congratulations for sticking it out and for creating an award-winning brand, because I know you've won like over 70 awards. You have
80.
80 awards. Oh, mm-hmm. She got like 10 new this week from when I...
No, I think I've just updated my images recently, so I counted them. And it was like, oh, I've gone from 70 to 80. Cool.
You're like, I'm going to need a whole new website just for all my awards.
Just my awards.
I love it, but I do want to say it is inspiring. So if you could go back to Cara when you were starting this business and going through some rough times, what advice would you tell yourself?
Well, I think I would give myself less pressure. I think I put myself under a huge amount of pressure, which I probably didn't need to do. Because I think when you do have a good product and it does what it says and customers like it and they like the way you're doing it as well, because that's the other thing is that, you know, building a brand is not just about the product per se. It's about how you're positioning your company and how you interact with your customers, how you deal with them. You know, we literally bend over backwards. I mean, we are our customers' bitches, basically. Like, you know, if there's a problem, I will bend over backwards in order to solve it. I will refund you. I'm not going to argue with you, right? Because there's a very good reason. It's not necessarily just because I'm a lovely person, because I am obviously a lovely person, but it's also because the practicality of that is that one person will go out and tell 10, like 100 people how awful your business is if you screw them over, and they'll probably tell about 10 people how great you are. So I would rather always veer towards like keeping people happy and not getting them to go and tell like 1,000 people on social media, because obviously when I started the business, social media wasn't such a huge thing. We only had like Facebook and Twitter. I mean, Instagram only came in like what, 2012, something like that, 2012, 2013. I was like, oh God, not another social media thing. And actually Instagram's been really good for us. So I would say keep your eyes and your mind open. And like try and learn, like I'm a big learner. I think that's really important. I think it's very easy to just kind of get on and do what you do and not really pay attention to what other, like I do pay attention to what other people are doing, but never, not really in a negative way. You know, I'm not one of these people. I don't sit there worrying about competition. I have lots of competition. And that's a good thing as well, because sometimes people like, oh my God, there's so much competition. I mean, I hear people talking absolute crap sometimes, which is I hear them saying, oh my God, there's just no products left to sell on Amazon.
I hear that too.
I'm like, oh my God, for goodness sake, like get a grip, people. Because the thing is, I can guarantee you, like if I wasn't doing Snooze Shade, I'd have probably found something else. I'd have probably found something like the other day, you know, because I'm a real consumer myself, and I love buying products, and I love product, like problem solving products. And there are loads of problem solving products that have not been exposed to the Amazon world. I know businesses, I'm constantly trying to say to them, go on Amazon. And they're not, because they don't like Amazon. And I'm like, well, actually Amazon is really good, because actually if you don't go on Amazon, your competitors will go on Amazon. So even if you only go like partially on Amazon, like dip your toe in the water. So there are loads of brands that don't ever want to be on Amazon. Well, you be them on Amazon, if you know, in the way that, you know, you can, there are other things you can do.
I know. And sometimes I think they're intimidated to get on Amazon because it's a whole new platform you have to learn with its own algorithm, and you're selling specifically in Amazon's rules versus Shopify, right? Where you have,
well, that is true, but I do think people make the algorithm and all that rubbish far too much of an excuse, because at the end of the day, if you've got a good product and you do good marketing and you actually package it nicely and you treat your customers well and you get good reviews, I've never, to be brutally honest, done anything with any algorithm that I'm aware of. I've just done what I call basic common sense stuff. So when people talk about algorithms, I just say, like, one of the things that I learned, which was really fascinating, was that, and the reason I moved into the Amazon space, was that I was previously selling through distributors and through, I had 22 worldwide distributors, like all over the globe. I was like, you know, talking to people like Bye Bye Baby, big box, like retailers in the US. I had retailers everywhere, right? But the thing was, I wasn't making any money. So this is one of the other things. That there are two bugbears. One is everyone complains about how much money Amazon takes. Now, don't get me wrong, okay? Amazon takes a lot of money from sellers. But you try working with a real retailer, okay? And not only do you have absolutely no control, right, over what they do with your product. Because if they want to stick it in the back of the store, in the storeroom, and never take it out, that's what they can do. Whereas at least with Amazon, you've got the opportunity to make sure that your product is on the store floor. And then it's how you are able to dress it, right? If you're in on sale in Bye Bye Baby, you could be stuck right next door to your biggest competitor, you know, and you could be stuck in a section of the store that isn't really popular. But on Amazon, you've got the opportunity to actually go, hi, I'm here, and this is why I'm good, and blah, blah, blah. But also just use your brains, right? This is why I get frustrated, which is that if you're selling a product, what would you look for? Stop worrying about the algorithms and like the keywords to the point where it becomes like some kind of alternate language. Generally, unless you're selling in like Mexico, Spain, Germany, etc., people are looking in English. And so one of the things I usually do is I always say to people, what would you look for? Like if I show you this glass with a flamingo, what would you look for? I'd look for a flamingo glass or a glass with a flamingo. I'd even look for glass pink flamingo. It's like, seriously, that's part of the algorithm that we're talking about. And I mean, I helped a lady once, she was so sweet. She was a friend of a friend and she was selling this sequin blanket. And she was like, I'm not getting any sales. I don't understand. And I was like, okay, well, first of all, you've got a unicorn on your blanket, right? And she was putting in like on her listing, she just put unicorn blanket or something. I know. I think she put sequin blanket. And I'm like, okay, look at the search volume, at how many people are looking for sequin blankets. And then look at what you get when you actually look for a sequin blanket. And what you get when you look for a sequin blanket is a lot of the mermaid blankets, because that's, they have sequins on them, et cetera, et cetera. And that was just me literally typing into Amazon sequin blanket. And then I went, right. And guess what happens if you type in sequin unicorn blanket? Oh, not that much comes up. And I said, and guess what words you haven't got in your title of your product? You have got sequin blanket. You haven't mentioned it's a unicorn, you know? And like, and honestly, sometimes it's just really, it is super simple. I mean, I know there's a lot of, don't get me wrong, I've hurt my brain on many, many spreadsheets, like sitting, going through whether or not that word's relevant, whether or not that word's. And also the fact that sometimes you might be ranking on keywords that to you don't seem like relevant. You have to remember people shop. They're not, the people on Amazon shopping are not computers. So they don't follow an algorithm. What they do is they go, oh, I really want some new glasses and I've got a pink kitchen, but I love flamingos. You know, I don't actually, I've got a red kitchen and, but I do love my flamingo glasses, but they're just from IKEA. Very, very, very dull.
They are cute.
But the thing is, they do actually, a shopper, like they do, if you imagine you going to the grocery store, are you telling me that when you go in the grocery store, you go to grocery aisle 1, 6, and 4 because you happen to know that baked beans are in this one and bread is, no, you get your trolley, you put your token in, you go for a little wander around. Oh, that looks nice. Oh, I haven't seen that. Oh, I like the look of that one. And then if we have Lidl over here and we have like the middle of Lidl, which is very dangerous because you have loads of random stuff. And so
yeah, that's why I avoid grocery stores. Terrifying.
Exactly. But the process of actual real human being shopping on Amazon is, I think, something that is often forgotten, because I think as sellers, everyone gets so obsessed with algorithms and tech and hacks and this and that. And actually, you know, yes, don't get me wrong, I've had a few hacks in my time, and you know, and I've done all the, I've looked into the algorithms and all the rest of it, but actually fundamentally what you've just got to remember is, you know, are you making your product, putting it in the right aisle on the right shelf so the right person at walking past looking for that product can find it?
I love that. And also specifically with your product, is you're dealing with moms who are sleep deprived. Like, you want to make sure that you are making it very easy. It's in their face, simple. And going back to what you said a little earlier, making sure that you're just giving them the best customer service and experience with your brand you can, because you don't want a sleep deprived mom coming after you. I was one of those once, and that would be scary.
Oh, I am even now. I'm dreadful. If I get bad customer service because I am the way I am with my customers, I'm like, oh my God, are you kidding me?
You're like, yeah.
I mean, I literally the other day I had a really bad customer service from some company, and I was like, I don't mention this very often, but do you know how many social media followers I have? And
do you know
I just
who
want
I am?
A returns label.
I love it. I love it. But it's true, because after I spent all this time selling on Amazon, I'm way pickier, and that's not how I would treat somebody. This is how you treat somebody. So you become the shopper. And I think that is a big success when you're selling on Amazon, is to know that you're a shopper and you treat people the way you want to be treated as a shopper, whatever the product is.
And I do think there are an awful lot of sellers who just don't really think about the customer. They don't. They only think about reviews, and that's not the same. Like, and actually, if you think about your customer, like, think about the customer experience, you know, like when, I mean, I've just ordered some products, and some of them have arrived, and they're like just literally in a clear bag with an FN SKU label on them. There's no care. There's no there's no branding. There's nothing which would make me think that this is a product that I'm going to like want to engage with. And then I get other products. I mean, like it was in the summer, I ordered some tops. And as I say, some of them arrived literally scrunched up, shoved into a plastic bag and whatever. And then others arrived and they'd got a bit of tissue paper around them. And then someone had put a sticker on, and they got like a little logo, and they had a little card inserted where it's like, really hope you enjoy your purchase. Come and say hi to us on social media. You know, like, just think about the fact that, you know, you want a review. Well, why on earth should anyone review something that's just been thrown into a plastic bag?
Yeah.
I don't know who I'm doing the review for.
Well, you could say, hey, I got your plastic bag, but then...
Yeah, it was pretty unimpressive.
So with your current Amazon business right now, are you facing any problems that you're tackling?
Oh, always. Every day. I have I call this my Seller Central white streak, which is constantly being added to by the joys of working with the Amazon business model. But like, for example, sales are down in the US generally. I think a lot of people are finding maybe sales aren't quite what they used to be. But, you know, my sales have actually gone up in the UK. Like, my product's quite a seasonal one. So we had a huge year in the UK. And now it's sinking off a little bit, and things are down, I think, year on year, not massively, but like a bit. Australia is massively, hugely up. And Canada, thanks to having had the stock limits increased from like 22 units to like, you know, a reasonable amount, at least giving us a couple of hundred. Like, business is kind of back on board, because that plummeted last year. And you see, some of the US could be, because what you have to remember is a lot of the times is that if you Canadians can't get hold of products, they'll order it from the Amazon US. And so maybe like it's switching like over a little bit. You just don't, I mean, to be honest, who knows? I haven't got a crystal ball. I don't think anyone does. I think you just have to be a little bit empathic to the fact that we are genuinely, like, I launched the business just after the last recession in 2008. And I was saying to a friend the other day, I said, I remember, and my product was $19.99, thinking, oh my God, will people be prepared to pay that for this product? Because we were going through really tough times, and we're going through tough times now. And so people will be making slightly more challenging buying decisions based on finances, not necessarily just on whether they like it or not. And that is also where building that brand value, building that relationship with your customers is so important, because hopefully then they automatically come back to you to buy something rather than going off to a cheaper competitor.
I like that. So what advice do you have for somebody who's just starting out, trying to figure out either what product to sell, or they have a product and they're about to sell specific to Amazon?
I was having this conversation over the weekend. So you've actually caught me at just the perfect time, because a lot of this is fresh in my mind. But it's really interesting. One of my biggest pieces of advice is sell something you like, and sell something you're interested in. Because the thing is that so many people just go, I'm just going to sell a product. And I had this conversation with someone, and he's like a big cycling fan. And I was like, okay, so you're going to, like, for example, you're going to sell flamingo glasses. And he was, and if I said that to him, he'd be like a bit like, oh, okay. But if, and even if you know that flamingo glasses are like the most like latest, like hottest keyword, and you've got it before everyone else and all the rest of it, it's still quite hard to really get excited about something you've really got very little interest in. And I do know that there are a lot of Amazon sellers out there who are just in it for the money. And don't get me wrong, nothing wrong with that. Okay. But I think the majority of sellers that I speak to have often started because they want to basically create a business and create a lifestyle. You know, they don't want to be like a slave to the boss. They don't want to be the 9-to-5 anymore. And let me just tell you, I don't do 9-to-5. I don't have a boss. I do. It's me and I'm lovely to me. Although actually sometimes I'm a bitch. Sometimes I'm like, you will work until 2 o'clock in the morning solving this problem. But the thing is, ultimately, is that, you know, I think a lot of people are looking to replace income that they could be earning from a salary. Not everyone's looking to exit, you know, like to build, keep building more and more businesses and more brands and then exit. And when you actually look at the numbers, which I'm a big fan of, so I'm a big fan of looking at real numbers rather than just waffle twaffle. So, for example, you know, people go, I'm a seven figure seller. Well, that's really fantastic. But if you're turning over 1 million and your costs are 900,999, right, then you're a crap seller, because actually you've got no profit, right? And what do we live off? The profit from our businesses. And that's what makes it a profitable business, which is something that you can actually then use to pay yourself, et cetera, et cetera. And so, In the UK, for example, I think the average salary is about 35,000 a year. Well, if you think about the number of products you'd actually need to do and what sort of profit margin you could do, you could easily run a six-figure business and actually still earn more than you would do in a job. You'd be able to have more time at home, more time with the family. I mean, yeah, by the way, don't get me wrong. When you were saying, like, what was it like running a business with a small baby? It was bloody tough. I didn't sleep a lot, not just because of the fact I had Holly. I was also up. I mean, I was like talking to Australian distributors, getting up at like 3 o'clock in the morning to have conversations, you know, and then going to bed. And then I'd ring my mum and I'd say, can you please come around and look after Holly? Because I'm exhausted and I need to sleep. But that's normal. That's, you know, right. If you're passionate about what you're doing and you're doing something that you love, you don't mind like putting in the time, putting in the effort, putting in the hours. But I think what always makes me laugh is when I see people who expect to be like running a very successful business and don't want to put in any time or effort. Ain't going to happen, honey. Because I, like, if that was the case, everyone would be doing it. And then also, you know, at the end of the day, there has got to be a point where you can see there's going to be a tipping point where actually you don't have to do those hours anymore. And that is really where, you know, you do start recruiting people to do some work for you. So it's not always about you being available all the time. You can have somebody else who can be available, even if it's just 20% of the time or 40% of the time. It means then you can then spend more time, and then that gives you more time to think and grow the business, which is, you know, I mean, I run my business on 13 SKUs. I mean, I know people who are running businesses on multiple thousands. I do not know how they do it. They are the ones who must be running like on super spreadsheets, you know. Incredible.
It is incredible. Yeah. I've never run a business with more than 16 SKUs on Amazon. So I do admire people who can do that. And I do one of the tips you just gave is run everything yourself until you know how to do it. And then you can hire help and you figure out what you want to do or don't like to do.
Get rid of all the shit that you don't enjoy doing. But also make sure you understand the shit before you pass it on. So in fact, I was actually telling this story this weekend, because I was saying about when COVID hit, and suddenly Amazon moved from like shipping FBA Prime orders, like, you know, within a few days to like within weeks. I'd actually in the February of COVID year, as we call it, I'd been doing some training courses, helping other people, showing them like how I ran my business, et cetera, et cetera. And I was like, oh, FBA, it's the way to go, blah, blah, blah. And then actually I switched on to FBM, but I didn't have any actual stock on FBM. I just did MFNs, which is when you do the fulfillment orders using Amazon stock. So what I was doing is I was going in, because it's changed, because you have to put in the shipping details, etc. But at the time, I could actually create an order with Amazon using my stock. They would fulfill it faster doing it that way than doing FBA. And I literally, that's how I got through. And I sat there for about 2 weeks. And what I did is I started, right, this is the process. This is when it goes wrong. This is what you do. This is how you fix that. You need to, because for example, you know, I didn't really know much about it at all. So I was like, okay, well, when do I put like the shipping details in? And I worked out that actually I could just put TBC and that would tick the box temporarily until the shipping details actually came in. And then I could update the shipping details. You can't do that now, people, just so you know. But my point is I had to learn something and do something completely opposite to the way that I normally did it in order to get through a quite tricky situation. And it worked. And suddenly sales went back up again. Had I relied and sat there back going, oh, well, you know, Amazon's not shipping my products, you know, I'd have been screwed.
Yes. And I'm a big...
Oh, and then I passed it on to my VA. That's what I did.
Yeah, exactly.
So I learned it for 2 weeks, made sure I had like the system down. Like I'm a big fan of SOPs, of like standard operating procedures, which is, and by SOPs, by the way, I don't mean fancy schmancy. I literally mean, this is how you log into Amazon. This is like how you, you know, do a label. This is how you, you know, those are your SOPs, because those are the things that end up taking you a lot of time to do that are little small fiddly jobs. Get rid of those little fiddly jobs, because actually get rid of 10 of those and suddenly you've got an hour back.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm a huge fan of doing FBA and FBM. That's fulfilled by Amazon is the FBA, fulfilled by merchant is FBM. And one other thing you mentioned is Amazon is constantly changing and there's ups and downs. Nice. And they change terms of services, like being able to have them fulfill the FBM to where you just have to do it yourself. And you just ride the wave, right?
Yeah. And also listen to what other people are doing, because, for example, the other day I was chatting to a friend of mine and I was like, oh, you know, I would do like Seller Fulfill Prime, but my warehouse is shut at the weekend. She was like, well, there is a way around it. And I'm like, ooh, do tell. So I was like, great. And that's the thing. If you don't know something, I think that's one of the things I think probably also I would say a lot of people would say about me is I'm not afraid to ask. Like, and that's what you definitely need to have an attitude of, I think, when you're working in this sort of environment. You know, don't be afraid. Don't have an ego. Like, we all don't know everything. I don't know everything. I don't know. I mean, every day I learn something new, you know. And I always, like, when I go to these conferences and things, even sometimes it's not even like something I've learned, it's somebody I've met. But sometimes it is something I've learned and I'm like, oh my God, that's really cool. I didn't know I could do that. So I go and have a play. And that's the other thing I do. I play quite a lot and I test things and I see whether it works. And then if it doesn't work, I don't do it. If it does work, I'm like, woohoo.
I love that. And I love that inventor side of you, that, you know, you have the marketing, the inventor side, and just the love for the customer. And I think that's a beautiful combination for you as a human and as your brand. Is there anything else you wish I had asked you during this conversation or something else you'd like to share?
Oh, I don't know. I think just don't give up, like, but give up if the numbers aren't working. Okay. So like, don't expect, like there are a lot of people out there who will sell you the dream of, you know, here you are today, you've got nothing. Tomorrow you're going to be a multimillionaire sitting on a yacht in Barbados. I mean, I fell for that. Like, I mean, well, I didn't fall for it actually, because I am quite cynical, but I remember seeing those Facebook ads, like this is back in 2014. And I remember seeing these Facebook ads where it was like, hey, you could just be like sitting on the beach, drinking martinis and just listen to Amazon, ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. And like, you're just going to be sitting there enjoying all this money. Well, let me just tell you, that is an out and out lie. You will, I mean, really, ultimately, I don't think anyone who has a successful business is just sitting on the beach ka-chinging. Don't get me wrong. As I said, I liked ka-ching. I like cocktails, as you know.
Right there with you.
Yeah. But I think, you know, it does take a lot of hard work. It isn't easy. If something was easy, everyone would be doing it and everyone would be brilliant at it. And I think, you know, that is just simply not the case. But I think if you do genuinely, if you enjoy what you're doing, so if you're a real tech, if you're quite nerdy and techie and you're really into, then maybe go more down like that algorithm spreadsheet route. But if you want to do it and you're not so sure, go for something that you will enjoy, because it makes it a whole lot easier. Like, you know, if you're like into crafts, do a crafty product. You know, if you're into beauty, do a beauty product. Is there something that, you know, you've used yourself, like I said, that you think, actually, you know what, I haven't seen that many other people selling it. I haven't been able to buy it on Amazon. There are gaps in the market, 100%. And it's not always about, oh, the other thing I'll say is not always about price. Like, everyone goes on and on about being the cheapest as if it's the best. It is not. I mean, my products are possibly usually the most expensive in category, if not the most expensive. They're like the second most expensive, which is actually quite a good place to be, frankly. And, you know, and actually you need to be able to make money from this business. If you can't, I've just had to put the price of my hero product up in the UK. For the last 12 years, it's been $19.99 and I've had to put it up to $21.99 because my manufacturing costs and the US dollar and everything else that was going on has completely messed me around. And I'm like, I'm not doing this if I'm going to be making like 25p. Thank you very much. So I was like, and actually, you know what? I think the market can take it now. I've got the brand reliability. I've got other products which are very similar, which sell for more. What is the justification for this one being like so much less? It can easily shift up a bit. And have I seen any massive drop off of sales? No. And that's the other thing I do. I mean, I know you're not supposed to, but I test pricing all the time. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I just play. And I'm like, oh, just increase it. And I don't know whether there's something that maybe my account, but I don't get suspended for like changing my prices. I chuck $10 extra on, I take $10 off, or actually I don't take $10 off nowadays. What I tend to do is I do a coupon instead.
Yeah, the coupon. Well, when I was playing with my price to get my margin up, and I did a big jump, I went from, I think I was around like $200. And within, you know, 2-3 months, I was close to $400.
That's and a big jump.
It's a very big jump. It was a very expensive leap. And I did play with it and I tested it. And I tried to never jump up complete $10, but I would inch it up and up and up just to see, you know, the demand of the market. And my competitors and others in this space were also doing the same.
Yeah. And I mean, the other thing that's interesting as well is a couple of times I've done it by accident, you know, because I was selling out the product. And so people were saying to me, well, just increase the price. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I'm like increasing the price and it's still selling exactly the same rate. And I'm thinking, oh shit, I'm still going to run out of stock. And then I hit one price and it was like, oh, that's, I'm feeling resistance. And then I went back. And then when I came back into stock, I've just always left the price back where it was, not the original price, but the price at the point where I just met some resistance before that. And that has been the price ever since. So I'm making an extra couple of pounds per unit on a product for I have been for the last like 4 years through accident.
I know, that's
so
beautiful.
Don't be afraid.
It is. And one of the cool things that happened with me, because I was running out of stock, so I also was putting the price up. People would complain like, hey, this is now expensive, but they left it in their cart. So when I came back in stock and was able to drop the price, it would pop up to them saying there's a price drop. And I'd get this big influx of sales because they kept it in their cart.
Exactly. And I mean, you know, at the end of the day, like you've got to remember we are small businesses and we've got mouths to feed, you know, and so we can only do what we can do. And I think, you know, customers kind of appreciate that, you know, if you are sort of seen as being a small, genuine like business. But I mean, I think, you know, there's lots of things you can do like coupons and discounts and all various other things that, you know, if you want to, but I mean, as a general rule, I mean, I very rarely do any of that. I mean, I think sometimes I've done like a tiny bit of a discount, maybe like in the spring before my busy season, but I don't think I've done that for the last couple of years. And I don't really do lightning deals. I don't really do like the other issue I have, you see, is if I do that, I get loads of resellers, because if I was suddenly to knock 25% off my price, suddenly I'd get people sitting on my listing, selling my product on my listing. And I've been there before and I've done it, and it's not nice. And actually no one benefits. It's just a race to the bottom on pricing, which I don't think really benefits anybody. Because what I don't like as well is that, like when I took the Amazon side of the business over myself, because previously it had been run through distributors and wholesalers, I had like 37 resellers on my hero product.
Wow.
And I just literally stopped selling. So I stopped selling to everybody. And I just sat there and waited, and they all eventually lowered their prices to a point where they knocked each other out and they sold out their stock. And then I went back on again, and I've never sold to a third party who sells on Amazon again since. And one of the reasons I do that is because, for example, I had a picture of a blue blanket that someone had as their main image for my product. And also they don't do the customer service. You know, they don't deliver the quality of customer service that I want, someone who's bought. And I get this even from big retail. I mean, I still sell to a few bigger retailers in the UK. And if I have a distributor, I'm very keen on making sure that they understand, you know, if there is a problem with a product, you deal with that product. I will replace that product for you. Like, don't worry about it, right? I'll give you a credit note against your next order, but you replace that product immediately and you do not mess around. You just sort it out and you give the best customer service you can, you know? And I just think that's so important, because that is that's part of running a real business, is that you should be being perceived wherever you are on sale in the same way.
Yes, I love that. Your brand reflects on you and you kind of take it personal. It's like,
I take it very personally.
Right. That's good advice. Take it personal.
Yeah, exactly.
No. Well, Cara, it has been an absolute pleasure to chat with you over the past 40 minutes. I really appreciate you coming on. I hope that you'll come back on and chat with us again soon. I'd really love to see you in person next time you're in the US. So give me a heads up.
Oh, yes. I'd love to.
Always a fun time. All right.
Well,
thank you
very much for having me. And I hope everyone's found it helpful.
Definitely. Awesome. Thank you so much. Have a good night.
You too.
If you're looking to get started selling on Amazon, or maybe need some help with your current sales on Amazon, go to fearlesssellers.com. That's a lot of S's in there. Fearlesssellers.com. Use coupon code FEARLESS for 50% off our next event. Thank you for listening to the Fearless Sellers, the Women of Amazon podcast. Until next time, stay fearless.